We are on the second class of the three higher trainings for dummies. My name's Miffy. I'm the program coordinator here, and I really enjoy leading a lot of the beginners classes because even though I was brought up a Buddhist, I still feel like a beginner. And I kind of, even though I fell into this very fortunate situation, I was very hard-headed and just made a whole lot of mistakes along the way. And so I'm kind of sharing with you what I wish I had have figured out way earlier. So we'll have our videos off and questions as we go, please put them into the chat straight away and it'll flash and I'll be able to see them. I do have a share screen that I'll get up every now and again for the various points just to make it easier to focus. And we'll probably finish at about 8. It's a little later than what it said on the advertising, but it's because I've thrown in a really nice guided meditation, just a short one. But it's important that we kind of get an experience of what we're talking about as well. So the three higher trainings are about the most essential skills that we need for if we want to attain enlightenment, if we want to become free of cyclic existence, if we want to become free of the bondage of the disturbing emotions, being pushed around by our afflictive states of mind and our worries and our different overwhelming feelings and distorted thoughts. And even if we have no interest in a spiritual path at all, we still need these three skills to be able to have any success at all. But the amazing thing about having these three higher trainings, that they're not ordinary trainings, they're higher training. So it means they're not just ordinary life skills, but they're transferable onto the path to enlightenment and can actually help us become completely free, reach nirvana, and then Buddhahood. And, you know, we put so much effort into developing our life skills, into getting an education, into learning how to use the computers, all of these things. It'd be terrible to think that at the end of our life, all of that effort just goes to waste. So with the three higher trainings, it's a way of developing those inner qualities, and that stays with us. That goes from life to life. And so also, as we'll see as we go through the class, that the motivation of the reason that we develop these higher trainings also means that these skills can become the cause of genuine lasting happiness. Instead of the up and down happiness, the occasional respite from misery, they can actually become a cause for real inner peace and clarity. So we can take a moment to set our motivation for the class. And I like starting where you are, whatever it was that actually got you to be able to log in. And I've found with me, it's usually quite a short-term reason. Either I'm stressed or somebody else is going and I wanted to be able to talk about it, or there's some particular issue going on in life at the moment. And that's kind of like the immediate motivator, and that's fine. Start where you are. And then we can think, why are we here? What's a bigger purpose? Is there any other reason we could be here? And so we can kind of expand our motivation out so it becomes altruistic and vast, so that the benefit that we're seeking, the happiness that we're seeking, may we be able to share it with others. Everything that we learn, may we then be able to become better, happier people and really contribute to the world in the best way. And the best way being to be able to help everyone without favoritism or bias, without forgetting anybody, and to be able to help in the best possible way. So why go for anything less? So it's kind of the shorthand for this. We can think with an attitude of sincerity and curiosity. Now I'll get the share screen. And so we've been looking at the three higher trainings, and they're higher because the goal is a lot more than just having a good life now. The goal is personal liberation and then enlightenment, Buddhahood for all sentient beings. So it's the highest possible reason for doing anything. And because it's such a big all-encompassing reason, it becomes really powerful, really strong motivator. And we have this analogy, and if we have all three of those higher trainings, then we cut the root of suffering forever. So the root of suffering, there's the tree of suffering there, and instead of trying to chop off each leaf individually, which could take eons, if you cut the whole tree at the root, you're done. So that's, you know, instead of kind of thinking that we've got forever, often we panic because we don't have forever. So cutting the root of suffering, the very cause of all of our problems, instead of just dealing with each problem as it arises, what if we could cut the very cause of all of them? And so for that, we need wisdom. And so last week we talked about how wisdom is the axe that cuts through that root of suffering. It cuts through ignorance, confusion, doubt, not knowing what to do, and all of the mistaken minds that lead to all of the disturbed states of mind, all of those disturbing emotions. However, to make sure that we don't end up at funniest home videos, when we're wielding that axe, that sword of wisdom, we've got to have two strong arms. Otherwise, we're just going to get into really big trouble. Or my other favourite show at the moment, it's on quite late, called The Science of Stupid. So you get science and you get funniest home videos. It's the perfect marriage. Anyway, so the two strong arms, their concentration, and that's what we're going to look at today. Concentration to be able to wield the sharpness, the clarity, the incisiveness of wisdom. Because if we don't, then our wisdom will boomerang back on us and harm us, and we'll end up being nihilistic or materialistic, cynical, all of those things. So we need to have that concentration to be able to really work things out well. And then the body is the support, and it's to do with ethics. And the way that we can remember this is that we embody it. We embody the teachings. We embody goodness. We embody the wisdom. And that's how we live our life, ethics. So if we can cultivate ethics, that's the main cause for creating happiness. How come we're not already doing it? Because we're distracted. And so we overcome distraction with concentration, and that's today's topic. And if we do that, then we can destroy all of those negative seeds with wisdom. So higher, aiming for more than just a good life, the personal goal of complete freedom, liberation, and then the altruistic goal, one's own enlightenment and the enlightenment of everybody. So looking at concentration. So once we begin, we should continue every day until we reach our goal. If conditions are perfect, we can do this in as little as 3 months or so. So this is probably the speedy way to, or the intensive way to develop concentration, single-pointed concentration. But it's not one of these things that you think, oh, other people can do, but I'll never be able to do it in this life. You could do it in less than a year. If you really focus, you can do it probably quicker than it takes to learn to drive. So we need single pointed concentration because without it, we can't stabilize our realization. So anything that we work out, any resolutions that we make, anything through the school of hard knocks that we discover about life or about ourselves, if we don't have concentration, we forget. And then what happens is we go through a whole nother cycle or process of trauma and work it all out and come to exactly the same conclusion and go, but I knew that. So if that's ever happened to you, and it's happened to me several times, it's because we don't have concentration. We're not focusing, and then we can't stabilize our insights. Yep, okay, so that struck a chord. And I mean, the really good thing about concentration is that if we can develop concentration, even if it's not yet single pointed, but if we can stay in the vicinity of the topic, it means we can accomplish whatever we put our mind to. It means that we stop panicking. So many times when we're stressed, we kind of panic because more and more things are demanding our attention and we can't focus. And we know all of them, we have to focus on all of them at some stage and we can't even figure out which one to focus on. And then we panic and we just lose it. We have a meltdown. So if we have concentration, we'll have natural confidence and be able to focus one step at a time and get it all done. And it also means that we'll be able to get rid of those, the gross delusions and the gross disturbing emotions, because we'll notice when they're there in their infancy, just about to arise, and we'll be able to put a stop to them before we let rip, before we become catastrophically depressed. We'll be able to notice the warning signs way, way, way earlier, so they won't get as overwhelming. So the other thing that we need concentration, we can't actually develop our wisdom without concentration. We get distractions when we're trying to develop our insights, our understanding. We have external distractions. They're usually the first things that we become aware of. Screaming kids, noises, if there's someone doing renovations next door, if you're hungry, if you're tired. So as beginners, it's kind of good to give ourselves a little bit of space to try and set things up nice, to make it a little easier for ourselves. But we also have distractions from internal objects, worries, obsessions, restlessness, attachment. And again, there are ways that we can develop an internal space that is free from those things. So Yangtze Rinpoche said, usually our minds are like cities of distractions, giving rise to countless superstitions and conceptual thoughts. So superstitions is often used in a Buddhist context to just mean all that catastrophizing that we do, and assuming that we know what's going to happen and it's going to be terrible, you know. And projecting qualities onto things that aren't there and then getting obsessed about them. So all of that's kind of called the superstitious mind. So our minds are like cities of distractions, giving rise to countless superstitions and conceptual thoughts. Calming this and focusing on virtuous objects is the basis for cultivating realizations. Without it, it's just intellectual and we'll still suffer. And so I'll just read another. This is from Yangtze Rinpoche, which a lot of the material for this course came from. So it's called Practicing the Path. Really excellent book. And here we go. So he says, by abandoning the object of our delusions, we decrease the afflictions. By abandoning mental wandering, we increase our practice of virtue. So what does that mean? In order to decrease the occasions when our mind gives rise to the afflictions, meaning the disturbing emotions, we should keep away from the six causes of disturbing emotions, as we discussed before. So we kind of touched on that last week, keeping away from those six things that all come together to create the perfect storm. According to Vasubandhu, it is most important that we maintain a distance from the objects of our delusions, the things that distract us. If we abandon the circumstances that give rise to our negative states of mind, we will naturally experience a decline in those delusions. It will eventually become natural for us to place ourselves in a conducive environment where our minds are distant from the delusions, and where we have space to apply the antidotes to our negative thoughts should they arise. So it's kind of like, give yourself a break. And if we want to be peaceful and calm, it helps to start in a fairly quiet, calm situation without a room plastered full of advertising, for instance. Also, as this quote mentions, by abandoning mental wandering, we are able to increase our virtuous activities. The method to abandon mental wandering is the practice of concentration. Distractions can be brought on by internal or external conditions. Oh, this is where he said it. Ordinarily, our minds are like cities of distractions, giving rise to countless superstitions and conceptual thoughts. We are able to free our minds from the objects of the delusions and the distractions. And if we do, we'll find it much easier to discriminate clearly between what to practice and what to abandon. So this higher training and concentration then naturally leads to ethics, to how we live in the world. Because ethics isn't just a theory of what you believe in. Like many, many people say, oh, yeah, I've got family values or whatever it is, but then how are they acting? So it's important to have concentration first because it leads to it. Okay, so what is concentration for a moment? Well, concentration, it's defined, and there's, as you'll notice in Buddhism, there is a great importance placed on definitions. So we know what we're talking about. We're all on the same page. So concentration is a mental factor that is capable of abiding one-pointedly on an object of virtue without distraction. So this is the difference between ordinary concentration and higher concentration. So ordinary concentration is abiding one-pointedly on any object. So you could be a sniper or a shoplifter and have perfect concentration. But higher concentration is abiding on an object of virtue. And what is virtue? It's something that creates happiness. So long-term happiness. Placing one's focus on kindness, loving kindness or compassion, or wisdom, clarity. So it's quite different from ordinary concentration, and it's also quite different from what's called attention capture, where our focus, say for instance, I love watching TV. I could spend hours watching TV. I do other things as well. If I have a suitably enough boring TV show, then I get other Library Tumper Centre admin done. But, I mean, how many of us have actually watched TV for hours and not even noticed? So that's not that we're concentrating on TV. Our attention is captured. It's the exact opposite from concentration, because we're not placing our mind on something using effort and then focusing on it. We're just going with constant distraction, constant excitement that re-grabs our attention all the time. So we actually have less and less concentration. Oops. Yes, Sandra. And I mean, in a way, if you're really tired, I've noticed having, say, the TV on in the background as a way of pacing myself, but it's not very healthy, because what happens is it distracts you regularly, and then that way you go, oh, what am I doing? And you focus again on your work. But it's a really roundabout way to do it, and pretty much a last ditch effort. Yeah, it's a background distraction. And I've noticed when I'm really trying to understand something, I can't have the TV on at all. I can't do anything else. I can't even have the cat there on my lap. So, you know, the rest of the time is good company just to get chores done, but not for concentration. So the whole purpose for developing, hope the cat understands, he's a very good-natured cat, for developing concentration is so that we become a better person, a good person, and we can't do that if we cannot concentrate, because it means that we're not going to be aware when disturbing emotions arise, we're not going to be aware when we're triggered, and we're not going to be aware when we retaliate. So all of that presence of mind, that comes from this skill of concentration. So it's really crucial. And like Yangtze Rinpoche said, it means that we'll be able to figure out what to do, what to practice, what to abandon, how to be in the world. We can develop that kind of discrimination. So it doesn't mean that we have to be able to do everything now, save the world now. It just means that we become really familiar with that attitude, and then we'll be able to react well no matter what happens to us. And so concentration becomes a support for that wisdom, developing our wisdom of how to live. And the result, okay, the result of developing wisdom, concentration, is mental and physical pliancy. So if you have really good concentration, a real sense of joyousness arises in the mind. It's actually really pleasant. And we can get a little taste of this if you really enjoy, say, doing a crossword or Sudoku or maths, you know, that anything that takes chaos and turns it into order, little cute little problem solving. So the kind of pleasure that we get from that comes from just that little bit of concentration. And we focus our mind and we get to the result, and it's a naturally happy thing to do. It's not a bland thing, it's actually joyous. So higher concentration means that our mind becomes naturally blissful. And not only that, but then our body becomes balanced, relaxed, and flexible. Better immune system, far more resilient. So both mental and physical pliancy, it's incredible. And that, of course, means that, it engenders more good qualities. And with that, then we can benefit others naturally. So I wanted to ask the class now, with this kind of background, what are the things that you need concentration in? So just put in the chat, what are some things that you do that you absolutely need to be able to focus on or concentrate with? Or you're in trouble. Driving. That's good. Yep. I've noticed I really need concentration when I'm setting up the tickets on Eventbrite and the automated emails that go out and everything. I really have to be able to focus that I put the right link for the right date. And in the beginning, I was too rushed and I didn't know well enough, and people got links for next week and all sorts of things. So driving, filling out forms. Ah, yes. So that's right, because it's effort, isn't there? There's real effort needed to focus and then make sure you put the right answer in the right place. Updating SharePoint and cataloging. I mean, that's what happened, wasn't it, with JobKeeper, that like 1,500 businesses put just misread the question and put how much money they were thinking of getting instead of how many employees needed help. You know, just add on a couple extra zeros there and it doubled it. So, yes, we need to be able to read the instructions. Just focus on the instructions for anything. Mistakes can be very costly, Ian. That's right. And I remember years ago when we were renovating the other building of Lungri Tumpa Centre before we moved here, and we were putting some varnish on the floor and stamped on the lid of the tin, three-dimensional, so it wouldn't wear off. If all else fails, read the instructions. Quite memorable, really. Okay, so they're the things that we need concentration in. Yeah, learning how to use new appliances, food processes to avoid injury. Yep, any new computer program, it takes effort, doesn't it? So learning a new computer program, it doesn't capture our attention. We have to focus that effort, and that's what we're not used to because so much captures our attention all the time. Now, what is something that you concentrate on that you find easy? So this might be actually trickier to recognize, because if it comes easily, or if you've developed that skill already in that area, then you might underestimate that that's what you're doing, concentrating. So yes, cycling, Bron, that's right. So cycling or driving, that's something that you concentrate on. And it's a really good example, actually, and you get feedback. If your concentration falls off, you fall off the bike. Jogging. I didn't know you needed concentration for jogging, but I suppose, yeah, so you don't jog into anybody. So these things, cycling, jogging, cooking, they sound quite different from filling in forms, learning a new piece of technology that could potentially harm you. Watching a subtitled movie. So all of these things, yeah, you need to focus on, but do you notice they're things that you enjoy? So already they're, because we enjoy those things, then we put the effort into concentrating and then it starts to come naturally. So reading subtitles, I can remember when I was little, the effort it took to read subtitles, and now I just don't even notice that I'm reading them. So there's something in that of if you enjoy what you're doing, or you find a benefit in it, then you enjoy it. So you don't necessarily enjoy reading subtitles, but there's such a great benefit for being able to understand the movie that you're happy to concentrate and put in the effort. So that's really a key to it there, is to find what are the benefits. So we get enthused. Okay. Now I had another reading too, to set the scene then. So this is from a different Rinpoche, Gelick Rinpoche. And just read part one, I think. So he says, in the beginning, your main struggle will be against wandering mind and depression. So just look for the object, and as soon as you notice a problem, correct it. As you develop, you'll be able to concentrate effortlessly for a great length of time. You'll be able to develop samadhi, which is single-pointed concentration on a virtuous object. First, you also develop a certain sense of pleasure and harmony within your body and mind. You concentrate until a great pleasure begins to arise within your head and spreads down, feeling like the gentle, invigorating warmth of a hot towel held against your face. This sense of pleasure spreads throughout your whole body until you feel as light as cotton. If you meditate within this physical pleasure or experience, it gives rise to mental joyousness. And when you meditate, you have a sense of inseparability with whatever you're meditating on. Your body seems to disappear. You sort of become one with the object. You almost want to fly away in your meditation. After this, you can fix your mind on any object of virtue for as long as you want, in whatever way that you want. Meditation or concentration is light and free, like a hummingbird mid-air drinking honey from a flower. So it kind of gives you a bit of an idea of the extent that we can develop concentration. So, Dan, yes, we're going to talk a little bit about what we focus on, the objects to focus on. And so as a beginner, some of the objects in nature can be nice, especially a view. More so than, say, focusing on a creek or a stream or something that's moving, because once we focus on something that's moving, it aggravates our tendency for distraction. So that's kind of hopefully given you a little bit of a taste of the amazing benefits of concentration. Let's have a look then, well, how come we can't concentrate? So we have some obstacles and antidotes. So here's an amazing photograph of Lama Yeshe and Lama Zopa Rinpoche that started this center and the whole organization that we're part of. So this is Lama Yeshe meditating up in Copan, I think, in the hills of Nepal. Ian, did you go to Copan? Possibly you did. Ian Griffin, that is. So there are various obstacles for us being able to concentrate, and they kind of come in a particular order, and we can overcome all of them. So the first one is just laziness. And I'll just check what the question is. Oops. Ah, good. Yep, Ian. So laziness and then forgetfulness. So laziness comes because we're not enthused about concentrating yet, meditating yet, and we're not enthused because we haven't experienced the benefits. Once we experience the benefits, then we're just right in there, can't wait to meditate. So until then, to overcome our laziness, natural laziness, we can use all sorts of little tricks to get us actually to meditate and to become familiar what the incredible benefits are. Because what laziness does is just looking at the, oh, I'm so tired. So we're looking at the drawbacks. They're just momentary drawbacks, but they stop us in our tracks. So it's the same with getting fit, isn't it? The way to actually get a fitness regime is to focus on how good it's going to be for you, not on how difficult it is. So there are all sorts of benefits of not just being able to concentrate and do the things that you want to well, but you quickly attain realizations. They come easily. Instead of having to go, oh, I don't get it, what do? You just naturally, they arise. You're able to, when you sleep really well and still have a clear mind and even meditate while sleeping. So then that way, if you've got no time in the day, You've got time when you're asleep. You can use all your time. What do we spend? One third of our life asleep? What a waste. It's like chopping off, you know, an extra 20, 30 years of our life. So the main thing for laziness is real encouragement and focusing on what the benefits are. So then we're enthused. Then the next one that arises is forgetfulness. We actually just forget. We fall off the wagon, as I tend to think of it. So Nagarjuna had this great analogy. He likened the mind to an elephant that's just roaming around crazy with disturbing emotions, probably like a drunken elephant. And this elephant is tied by the rope of memory to the pillar of the object of meditation. So whatever our object is, we keep on remembering, ah, that's right. So we're tethered to it. And what I've found when you're first developing concentration is that I can be quite focused for 1 second, 2 seconds, 3 seconds, and then I kind of get a bit weak. And my focus might get a little bit less, but I'm still in the vicinity. And then I'll go, oh, yeah, that's right, and come back again. So that's a little bit like the post of what it is you're meditating on. The rope is really long and the elephant's roaming all around, crazy, 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 but still within the vicinity. And then slowly, slowly gets closer and closer to the object, more and more calm. There is a particular tension, isn't it, when you're trying to focus and you can feel you're about to drift off or you're getting tired, a bit fatigued, that particular tension, that's like straining at the rope, isn't it? So this is where then we can talk about what do we focus on, and not just any object. We want to focus on something that has spiritual relevance to us. We don't just want to focus on a cup or an air conditioner. Something that if we're looking at it for a very long time, it's going to leave really positive imprints on our mind. And so we don't want it to be anything that causes delusions like desire or aversion to arise, or craving or clinging. So, you know, if you like architecture, you might be focusing on an architect's drawing of a house and imagining the house. But, you know, you might end up just thinking about, oh, how sad, I'll never be able to build this house and I wish I had a nice house. And then what use is having this mental house in your mind anyway? So, of course, as a Buddhist, you would be focusing on something like a Buddha statue, an image of the Buddha, an image of someone who's accomplished everything that we want to, so that we get inspired as well. The main thing is to become familiar with that object and then bring it inward, so we no longer need that external prop anymore. If we focus on something like a candle flame or a creek or something like that, it's still our attention is being drawn outwards, and that's not so good for developing concentration. So we want to have real consistency. We focus on whether it's a great saint, whether it's Jesus, Muhammad, the Buddha, someone who's really accomplished ultimate wisdom and compassion. And then we focus on them, and then we alternate, and then we close our eyes and we bring all of that to mind. Until we fall off, then we open our eyes again and look at the image. And then, so we alternate between inner and outer until we no longer need the external prop. And we've got to be really consistent, because this is like advertising, isn't it? Advertising, people know, doesn't matter what quality the ad is, however much you spend, as long as people see it over and over and over again, it'll go in. And I often think about, kids, when you read kids' stories, a lot of them are really stupid, and that's what goes into their head over and over and over again. At least you want something really ethical or uplifting or positive to go in. So laziness and forgetfulness, any questions about those? Comments at all? All okay, clear enough? So these first two are pretty much to do with the initial stages of developing our focus, our concentration. And then, Ian, so many distractions today, it's easy to become lazy. I hear you. So then once we actually have established enough of a practice and we're trying to focus, then the next things that happen, mental wandering and depression, sometimes known as agitation or sinking. But I like this wording, wandering or restlessness and depression. So often and this is what Gelug Rinpoche says, that the tension or of the effort to meditate produces agitation or depression. So once when we're really trying hard, we get tired, we might get a heaviness of mind, get sleepy. It's quite overwhelming. And this is like an experience of mental depression, the heaviness. The subtle form of that is that we remember the object, so we keep our mind on the object, but we kind of go into a subtle kind of delirium, really, where there's no clarity. We're just kind of half asleep. We're pacified, but the mind is just involved with the whatever the topic is, but it's not clear. And so what happens is that you can spend hours and hours and hours doing that. While you're doing that, it's quite nice because you're free from the gross delusions, but it has no strength. And so you come out of the meditation and you go to work and you still blow your top at everybody. So that subtle one is something to be really careful of. I'll come back to it in a moment. So we've got to just distinguish between proper meditation and this one characterized by a subtle depression. The other one, the mental wandering, our thoughts drifting away to thoughts of the past, thoughts of the future, what's on the telly. And even one of the lamas quipped that he always gets his best ideas in meditation. And that's what I've found too in retreat, because you have released all of the busyness of life, then there's this space for really good ideas to arise. So what you do there is you keep a pen and paper on your desk and you jot those things down straight away so that you can release them and not be distracted. That's the way to do it. So this, coming back to the depression, the subtle depression, that's where we have this danger of using meditation just to calm down and feel nice. So we are free of the disturbing emotions for that time, but it becomes a materialistic kind of thing because we go and we do the meditation to feel good and we don't actually put in place any causes for that inner happiness. The point of the meditation is to then, when you've finished all of that hard work, you go out into your daily life and your daily life is calm and harmonious and you're not reactive anymore. So it's quite different just relying on the meditation just to feel calm and feel good, and then once you're no longer meditating, then you no longer feel calm or good. Then there's very little difference between that and just having a drink, isn't it? Just drinking alcohol to calm down. At least the meditation won't become toxic like alcohol does, but still it's not putting in place anything that's going to help us in the long term. Then we have these, the last two, not correcting problems when they arise and over-applying the antidotes. So failure to correct problems means that we just kind of get overwhelmed and give up. So what to do when we're feeling kind of depressed and heavy and sleepy? Tighten your focus. Actually put effort into tightening your concentration. And if we're getting quite uptight and tense and agitated, instead of trying harder and harder and harder to do something about it, relax your concentration. So many people in the West actually have that one of just too tight and can't actually relax. So one of the biggest things to learn is first, before you even sit down and meditate, how to relax. So we've got to have this nice balance between being relaxed and not sleepy. Relaxed and focused. And what you might find, because we've associated relaxing with sleep, when we relax, then we automatically get sleepy. It's a terrible association because we're not used to being able to relax while still keeping an alert mind. So Gelug Rinpoche said, when we get too tight, concentrate on happy thoughts, like kindness. It's like washing our face in cold water. So that's, you know, when we spot a problem, we've got to correct it. And then don't keep on then getting paranoid and checking all the time, because then we go to the other extreme of putting antidotes in there where we didn't need them. So it's a nice balance. And there's a really nice analogy, and a few of you brought it up already, about, you know, with driving. So you have the focus of driving, and there's also a part of your mind that is checking that you haven't gone to sleep, that you're not getting drowsy. So there's those two skills, isn't it? One part of your mind is focusing on the business of driving. The other part of your mind is checking, am I still there? Am I still focusing? So that's actually the real meaning of mindfulness, that remembering to keep on driving. Now, I thought we could do a little meditation, but do you have any questions or comments before we do a meditation, just to get an experience of this? Maybe you'll look at driving. You know, if you do drive, those skills of driving, you'll be able to recognize them in your meditation practice as well. They're not necessarily transferable, but you'll be able to recognize that same process. Okay, let me just have a... So I have a really simple meditation. So let's do this. It's a Buddhist practice. The main thing is to set our motivation so it becomes altruistic. The purpose of doing any meditation is to tame our mind, tame that wild elephant, to be able to overcome disturbing emotions, bring our own peace, and eventually bring world peace. So take a couple of deep breaths. And what we're going to do is focus on sound, some sounds. So whether you can actually hear them or whether you can imagine hearing them, that's okay. But levels of sound. So first off, bring your focus to the sound of your own breath. Say maybe you can hear the breath come in and out from the nostrils. The sounds within your own body. Maybe the gurgling of your stomach. Maybe, you know, like if you have a cold and you can hear your blood pumping through the body. So just have your focus there in that vicinity of within your own body, all the various sounds. And then just gently shift your focus to just the immediate vicinity of your body. So maybe as you're breathing, the rustling of the fabric of your clothes that you're wearing as your chest rises and falls. The rustle of the clothes. Maybe if there's a little ant walking next to the chair or on the table there. Then the sounds that are happening in your room. If you have a heater on or air conditioning on, maybe some breeze is coming in the window, rustling curtains, maybe a little mouse or a little insect in the corner, the cat or the dog snoring. What are the various sounds that you can hear that are just in your room? And then shift your attention to the sounds of what's happening just in the vicinity of your house and your garden, or outside of your room, maybe the wind in the trees, people walking by quite close. Any wild animals or possums that might be in the garden. The little tiny creatures rustling around. And then broaden your focus to your suburb, your neighborhood. What's happening on the street, at the top of the street, at the bottom of the street, in that very large radius around where you are at the moment. Then out further to the whole suburb, the city of Brisbane or whichever city that you're in, the sound of the cars on all the various streets, people talking in their houses. Then expand your awareness out to the countryside, that far away vicinity. Different sounds in nature, rivers, and then notice the different quality of your attention of when you're focusing on an area, your concentration is quite tight, focused. And then relax your attention and become aware of the spaces in between all these areas that I've mentioned. Become aware of the countryside, the neighborhood, your garden. Simultaneously, relaxing your focus, becoming aware of the space in all of these places. And identify this fundamental state of the mind, unsullied by thought, just in its own state, mere clarity, luminosity. Feel the spaciousness and quality of this type of concentration that's very expansive. And if any thought or distraction arises, if any sound from any of those areas arises, just notice and name. Without getting captured, just resting in that expansive awareness. You're not your thought or your emotion. You're not the distraction. So having recognized this spaciousness and clarity of your mind, then rejoice in your efforts of doing this short meditation, regardless of whatever the results are, by practicing concentration, we'll be able to develop concentration, and then everything else will flow from that, including lasting peace and happiness for oneself and others. So take a nice deep breath in through the nose, out through the mouth. Gently open your eyes if they're closed. Bring your senses back to the room. So tell me, how was your concentration tonight? How'd you find the meditation? Awesome, that's good. Did you get a kind of a feel for the different ways of focusing? That nice balance, isn't it? And so this, the meditation on the sound, that part, I find it's quite easy, because it, normally sound is something we'd get distracted by, so it's kind of like working with it, isn't it? So normally we just get distracted by the loudest and most recent sound, and this way we can kind of just become aware then of the very small ones and outside. So it lessens our distractibility in a way, but also we get that experience of spaciousness, isn't it, where all the sounds arise. Where? In our mind. So pretty quiet except for the lorikeet. Yes, I think when you'd really try to meditate, then the lorikeet could be a little bit of a tricky one, isn't it? Okay, and Dan, lightly good. That's a nice way of putting it. So the next thing then, let's have a look at just some kind of rules of thumb of how to make it easier, what to do to help us in our concentration practice. All right, so the solutions, what to do. And so these solutions are pretty much, when we're looking at those six factors that cause disturbing emotions, What they're mainly dealing with here are the object and inappropriate attention. So let's have a look at the object. And many, many times we're encouraged to abide in solitude. So that means physical solitude, free of the lorikeet, social media, the cat coming and putting his little paws, purr, 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 free of the list, the to-do lists, and free of things that will unbalance our physical equilibrium, like alcohol or drugs. Don't sit down to meditate having had a whole lot of coffee. So abiding in physical solitude means getting the circumstances set up to help us, and distancing ourselves from, so meaning mental solitude as well, making sure we give ourselves a break from everything that normally agitates us, makes us cross, makes us lustful, makes us restless, dissatisfied, all of those things. So just like they say, don't go shopping on an empty stomach because you buy twice as much. So when you sit down to meditate, to kind of also have mental solitude, to be free of those triggers for the disturbing emotions, especially as beginners, we've got to kind of help ourselves here along the way. So here's another little bit from Yangtze Rinpoche about what to do. So seeking solitude is the practice of the bodhisattvas. Solitude refers to the solitude of place. Right now, we are under the control of the mind, and the mind itself is under the control of the delusions. Therefore, ultimately, we are under the control of our delusions, our disturbing emotions. We thus lack the wisdom to be able to differentiate right from wrong. And in general, our minds are more closely associated with the delusions than their antidotes. So in order to gain victory, in order to conquer the delusions, we seek solitude so as to distance ourselves from our delusions in order to be able to cultivate those antidotes in our mind. Why do we need to do this? Why do we need to seek the refuge of solitude in order to ascertain Dharma with a clear mind of wisdom? Isn't it possible to live in the midst of our distractions and still learn about Dharma? Of course, it is possible. To merely gain an intellectual understanding of the Dharma, we don't need to seek solitude. However, in order for the Dharma to become a path that will benefit us now and in future lifetimes, in order to be able to effectively subdue our minds, we need solitude to be able to develop the antidotes to our delusions. So Shantideva says, in this way, becoming weary of objects of desire, develop joy in solitude within the peaceful forest, empty of argument and conflict. So mental solitude, free of rumination, free of obsessing over things. Now, usually when we feel like this, that we want to become free of all of those disturbing emotions, it's when we want a holiday. It's when we're like, oh, I can't wait to go on holidays, or even the long-term one, when I retire. So this urge for a holiday isn't an urge for a holiday. It's an urge to be free of these objects in our mind that disturb us all the time, things that rile us up or make us dissatisfied. So Lama Zopa Rinpoche has often said the real holiday is the mind free of delusion. I love this. But often if we've never experienced that, what are we going to do? Like if we've never relaxed, what are we going to do? So we need to have both. This is what I reckon. You need to be able to have a break. to have this physical solitude, a holiday, a rest. But then don't just kind of bleem out and sleep the whole time and then go and distract yourself all over again. Actually use that time where you're rested and relaxed, and so you can focus without getting sleepy or fatigued to actually do the Dharma work, the Dharma study. You know, when you're in a good state of mind and you are rested and you can think about whatever problem or issue is going on in a new way, in a Dharma way, ask yourself, what would the Dalai Lama do? What would he say? And you've got that mental space to sit with that and think about it and come up with a whole new solution instead of just obsessively worrying about things. So I think, you know, often if we do get to have a holiday, we miss it. We miss the potential of it because we have the physical rest, but then we just jump straight back again into entertainment. And that's why when we come back, we're often just as tired as when we started because we haven't had that real holiday. Or even if we did calm down and rest, but if then we didn't use that opportunity to work on our mind, the holiday will come and go, you know, 3 months later, we can't even remember it. So if we can use that holiday to help us in our own time pacify all of those disturbing emotions, that's the very, very best. And then we won't get disconsolate about it. You know, we won't get kind of overwhelmed and give up, because we'll actually have energy to do the work. And then when you've got that, then you can slowly venture out into the world and you won't get triggered. You won't retaliate anymore. You'll have that presence of mind. Just like in those first few days, if you really have had a good holiday, you are quite rested. Everyone goes, oh, wow, you look so healthy and relaxed. So that naturally happens, not from the holiday, but from giving the delusions a rest. So I found this, I proved this to myself actually when we went on retreat with Lama Zorup Rinpoche. And so we were there in Bendigo for the retreat. It was going to be this year as well, but COVID happened. And so one retreat was like 4 weeks, another was 6 weeks. Get up really early in the morning when it's still dark, start meditating, pujas and ceremonies and teachings all the way up to lunchtime, then have a bit of a break at lunch to do whatever prayers that you have commitments for, then teachings again at 5 and then at 8, sometimes up to 10 o'clock at night, sometimes up to midnight, and then back up again for 5 a.m. It's hard work, but it was so exhilarating and I really felt like it was a holiday, even though I was a bit sleep deprived, but then I started sleeping in. But why it was a holiday? Well, for one, it was a holiday from all the emails, but mostly it was a holiday from the delusions, from the disturbing emotions. I got to really focus on everything in a new way, in a Dharma way, use my wisdom and sort things out. So even though it was a lot of hard work, I actually felt like finally I'd had a break. Finally, I'd found that mental space and actually been able to dive into the things that I really wanted to. So the real holiday is the holiday from the delusions. So that's to do with the objects. And so if you know the things that distract you or the things that capture your attention, video games, TV, but also getting yourself into debt and then stressing about money, all the entanglements of family, all of those things, we've got to be able to carve out some mental space and find a way to do that. And if it means actually getting a nice physical space to then, or going on holiday to then do the mental work, but don't forget about the mental work. So that leads us to the other one, to do with attention or the inappropriate attention or distorted attention when we are motivated by attachment, motivated by pride, by fear, by hatred or aversion, all of those distorted attitudes, inappropriate attention. So instead of having our attention captured like that, we now choose an object of attention that's going to be really beneficial. In the short term, it's pleasant, and in the long term, it connects us with all the qualities we want to develop. So like meditating on a flower or a flame, it could be good, but it doesn't connect us with the qualities we want to develop. We can do a little bit of meditation on impermanence and transience, on dependent arising, all of those things. But for us, especially as beginners, we want something that's going to enthuse us, inspire us. And so an object, whether it's an image of the Buddha or a spiritual tradition that you're part of, it can also be developing an object of an inner quality like loving kindness or compassion. And remember, these things have definitions as well. So love or kindness isn't about kind of attachment and wanting other people or their acknowledgement. Actual kindness or care is this feeling of just wanting them to be happy, wanting the best for them. So becoming familiar with that, and becoming familiar with that as a altruistic way. So not just for the people that you like, not just for one's loved ones, but really wishing the very best for all the strangers, for the ones I haven't met, for all the, not just the humans, but the animals as well. And even then going to wishing the very best for one's enemies, the people you hate, that you can't stand. You know, if they had what they actually needed, they wouldn't be like that. If Donald Trump had what he needed, he wouldn't be like that. So that's the last one, okay? You first did the warm feeling we have towards our loved ones, then the strangers, then the enemies. Then avoiding laxity and excitement. So avoiding that restlessness and avoiding depression. So both of those things, they're motivated by attachment or aversion. And they are addictive. Those disturbing emotions, attachment or hatred, repulsion, both of them are addictive. When we're cross, it's addictive. When we're craving, it's addictive. So I have to be aware when that's arising and put a stop to it before it runs away with us. Otherwise, what happens, and I've got to admit I've done this, you sit down to meditate and then you think about something someone said to you the other day and it's like, oh, I really didn't like that. And then you think about all the other things wrong with them and then you start winding yourself up, oh, yeah, they did this and they did that and I hate them. And then what have you been meditating the whole time? What have you familiarized your mind with? At the end of the session, you're not peaceful and calm. You've just been stewing. So that kind of rumination, it's addictive. And if we just do it in our conversations, then pretty much when we sit down to meditate, if we're not careful, we'll just do that too. And within half an hour, we would have noticed either we've just been in a funk, concentrating on how much we dislike somebody and all the multiple reasons why, or we've just been daydreaming about something we want. And that's kind of pleasant too, because it's a nice thing, so we want it. But both of those are actually inappropriate attention. They're cultivating our disturbing emotions. So this is why we need to have that kind of presence of mind, the remembrance, the rope of remembrance that goes, ah, here I'm getting distracted over to here, winding myself up into anger, or here I'm getting distracted winding myself up into attachment and craving. So I found actually recognizing that those two disturbing emotions of attachment or hatred or aversion, repulsion, recognizing that they are addictive, recognizing that they flirt with us, that they're alluring, being able to notice and name that, here comes that alluring sensation or that alluring thought that I just want to jump into, then you go, aha, I recognize you. Nope. I'm going to focus back on what I'm focusing on, kindness, the qualities of the Buddha, patience, all of those things. And so there's a lot in this laxity and excitement, but the very first stage of that is just to recognize when they're happening. So first things first, don't try and be perfect straight away, but try and break that addiction of when they're happening, jumping into them. When they're happening, go, here it comes, all that alluring thing, how nice, but no, while I'm sitting here meditating, I'm not going to jump into all of that. And then trying to achieve and maintain stability, clarity, and intensity. And the way to do this isn't by just meditating longer and longer. The way to do this is to just meditate for the same relatively short amount of time and just make it better quality. So please don't fall into that thinking, I've been able to sit quietly for 10 minutes, I'll do 20 minutes, and then an hour, and wow, I've got up to 2 hours now. No, what we want is for maybe 10, 20 minutes to have that become very easy, and then to have our clarity become more better so that we can focus. And we don't kind of go dull, but we become alert and joyous. So a short time is better, actually. And if we do sit for a long time, like I was saying before, it might feel good at the time, but the benefit doesn't carry over. So I asked a while ago, I asked Corey Jackson about this, you know, what about, say, surfing? Because he loves surfing. What about surfers? And there's so many movies about this surfing of being in the zone. You know, you're on the waves and you're going down the tubes or whatever you do. And it's such a blissful experience because you are one with the moment. And clearly you have to have some kind of skill, otherwise you fall off the board. And so I asked Corey, can you transfer those skills, say with surfing, of being in the moment, of releasing all of the distractions, of being concentrated and all of that joy, can you transfer that over to the rest of life? And he said, doesn't necessarily transfer. So how come it doesn't necessarily transfer? Because we become dependent on that external activity for that good feeling. So while we're surfing, it's great, but if we can't surf, we're heartbroken. So don't make your meditation like that. While you're meditating, it's great, and when you're not meditating, you're all stressed and whatever, because it just becomes another drug. So actually, His Holiness the Dalai Lama said, meditation's kind of hard work. It's at the end of the meditation session that you relax. Oh, phew. Then you can relax. Then you have a well-earned cup of tea or something like that. So we're trying to have stability so that that roaming elephant becomes still, clarity so we don't go into that subtle sinking or subtle depression, and then intensity, getting better and better at our focus. So just a kind of a word of warning here too, that don't think that multitasking, this was the other thing that Corey said, that multitasking is just disastrous for concentration, because what we're doing is just agitating ourselves or distracting ourselves each time. So we're actually having less ability to concentrate. We're just going, oh, look at this. And then our attention falls off and we go, oh, look at that. And we might get some things done, but actually that's attention capture. And if we're trying to do this and we're trying to do that, there's a huge amount of energy that it takes to switch from one thing to another. And we get tired very, very quickly. So it's really worth trying to focus on just the one thing and be really consistent with it. And you'll notice that it takes a while to develop stamina like that. But that's what we need. And I think now in our age of attention capture, we just become aware how little ability we have to focus on anything because we don't actually get to practice it. Any questions, comments, anything at all? Have I enthused you to begin a concentration practice? I hope I haven't scared you off. I hope that you can see that there's enough benefits there. You know, not just for the general life skills, surfing and driving, but, you know, if we can transfer it over, then it's for complete emotional freedom, liberation from cyclic existence and enlightenment. So really taking it to what it can accomplish, and then we get everything in between. So remember, with concentration, first, the incredible benefits, like you said, Bron, on all walks of life. But then also that once we develop concentration, it's a pleasure. It's not always hard work. Remember those things that you said before that you're good at concentrating. If you love driving, for instance, or you know, good at cooking, or I actually love learning a new computer program, and I love building websites and pages and things like that. So the things that you enjoy, you're happy to concentrate on, and being able to develop your concentration, it makes you feel good. So if we can develop that with our mind, it's not just a fleeting feel good. Our mind becomes pliant, relaxed, joyous, everything that we want. No questions? So, for the last slide for our little summary. Three higher trainings, not just for a good life, but the complete cessation of all suffering because you cut all the causes. Oh, yeah. So, Sandra, encouraged by 10-minute meditations over and over and over again. All the lamas say this. Don't bust a gasket overdoing it. 10 minutes is fine. Actually, 5 minutes. And then Eddie said today, then you increase it by no more than 20% each time. And so you can figure that out also by when you can stop the meditation or stop the focus before you feel tired. So you stop whilst you still feel, oh, I could keep concentrating here. And then that way you build up this good habit, because if we stop whenever we feel tired, we'll associate concentration with tiredness all over again. So that's no good. So, yeah, nice short meditation. Lama Eshi also said, even when you're doing a retreat, if you're going into retreat for a week, don't do hours and hours long sessions. Do lots and lots of half hour sessions. Then have a break, get up, walk around, have a nice cool drink, all of those things so that you're refreshed and again. So it's a very gentle long-term proposition. Yes, 10 minutes is doable. And of course, best in the morning, because we're rested even before you get out of bed. before you get into the busyness of the day, that's when you want to do it, because you're rested and your mind hasn't jumped off into all the distractions yet. Those first few seconds when you open your eyes and become conscious without you conceptualizing about everything. Oh, there's this and there's that. Just that kind of spaciousness when you first open your eyes, that's the time. Before puss arrives, that's right, before the cat arrives, yes. Actually, even if it is the cat that wakes me up, what I try and do is wake up a little slowly, and often the thoughts or the awareness that I have, it's like when you've had a dream, you think, I'll remember that because it's just so clear, and then within a minute or two, it's disappeared again. So you just want to go through that state, that process slowly with awareness. All right, so we have our analogy. Come back to it again and again. We've last week talked about the wisdom that cuts the root of suffering, and this week the two arms of concentration. And then next week, the final one, ethics. How to embody all of this. Ian, so by doing longer meditation, if you're not used to it, you could end up associated with a chore, and that's exactly what happened to me. So I really need to trick myself into things by thinking, oh, it's going to be easy, it's just short, just like I trick myself into doing admin work by just staying in my pajamas. You know, it's no big deal, I'm still in my pajamas. So you ease yourself into it. You've got to be kind to yourself as a beginner whilst you're trying to be disciplined. It's like trying to discipline kids. You know, you generally encouragement and kindness whilst being firm, making things kind of, you know, fun and exciting and seeing the benefits, and then that way we develop, we can grow. Okay, so the homework, those of you who got the, did I send them out? I hope I did send out the notes. Yep, right. So on one of the pages there was the wisdom one that was to do with shopping. Now this week, the one for concentration is to just try to do, say, for instance, that sound meditation, so that you focus your mind on something and you try and keep it alert and clear for a short time. Or you focus on developing kindness or compassion. And whenever you have a distraction, notice and name. So you notice, here comes agitation or craving or aversion. So you notice it and then you name it. Instead of getting involved, this person said this or that, just go, here comes that alluring feeling of aversion or that alluring feeling of craving. Notice it, name it, what category it's in, not the details. Put it aside and bring your focus back to whatever it is, whether it's the breath, whether it's the spaciousness, whether it's kindness. So we can dedicate the merits now, all of your effort, your good-heartedness, your good intentions, your concentration. You know, it's not to be underestimated coming to a class like this where it's online. This kind of concentration takes a little bit more to focus your mind, doesn't it, rather than being in the room. So that really indicates how much we need concentration. So regardless of whether you were able to concentrate or not, the fact that you tried to, that's what counts. So feel really good about that. And whatever effort that you put in, it's going to pay off in realizations. You're going to experience the benefit of it. So we can think about dedicating that, all of that effort to not just these short-term goals that we get so involved in, but really what's the biggest thing that we can dedicate it to being able to master our concentration so that we can use our wisdom and we can develop that wisdom. And if we do that, we can cut the root of suffering forever. And if we do that, we can then also develop all of our qualities to help everybody else. And don't we want to help everybody else? At the moment, it's very limited what we can do, but doesn't have to stay like that. So let's dedicate all of that effort to these goals, liberation and enlightenment for oneself and all others. And now please go and relax. Enjoy the rest of your evening, and I'll see you same time next week.